Let's Talk nature expert Barry Madden also enjoys the benefits of spending time with wildlife. He has long known the perfect spot to stop the car and enjoy it. Here's Tony to reveal Barry's favourite location.
There are two roadside pools at Salthouse in Norfolk that, for their size and location, provide enormous entertainment and interest for the wildlife enthusiast. There's only room for half a dozen cars to pull off the coast road and park up, but this is sufficient to cater for a regular turnover of folk who indulge in a spot of duck feeding and in summer patronise the ice cream vans strategically parked on the farm access point that divides the pools. What a delight it is to be able to sit there, wind down the windows and indulge in watching the antics of creatures that have become used to being close to people. We regularly stop there for half an hour or so, especially during quiet winter afternoons when any sunshine illuminates the scene to perfection. The cast of characters is ever-changing. Although there are regular company members that can be relied upon to perform, the ever-present mallards, some of dubious heritage, keep close to the parking bays in the knowledge that any passing vehicle could hold their next meal in the form of stale bread or seed, ready to be scattered before their hoovering beaks. The drakes are very colourful and forever squabbling over the rights to the proportionally scarcer ducks. During spring, it's amusing to watch them circle round and produce their courtship dance, whereby they will raise themselves out of the water as though relieving themselves of troublesome wind, but rather than emitting a rude noise, a small, sharp whistle is produced. Other wildfowl will pop in for a bathe from time to time. Tufted duck, widgeon, shell duck, shoveler and teal use the facilities at need. Belligerent moorhens strut around on their oversized yellow-lobed feet, daring other birds to get in their way. They breed round the margins of the pools or among the more reed-filled areas and seem to have learnt to tolerate their own kind to a much higher degree than in other locations. Of course, they fight. That's what they do. But it seems two or three pairs will settle down in reasonable harmony. In late summer, it's possible to watch the adolescents from a previous brood helping their parents with raising a second brood of small, black-coated chicks. Common behaviour, but not always easy to see in wilder spots. A family of mute swans often glides up and down, terrorising small birds when they dare to block access to any pile of seed. It's quite funny to see the cob grip the feathers of an offending gull and with a flick of its head send the squawking offender off to one side. The gulls naturally feature prominently in the throng. They are mainly black-headed, but smaller numbers of common, herring and lone lesser blackback are regular attendees. The black-headed gulls will swarm around any proffered loaf, even taking bread from the hand. The common gulls keep their distance, wait for one of the others to get a beakful, and then chase it mercilessly until it gives up the prize. Herring gulls can sometimes be bold, but never chance too close to an encounter, and the lesser blackback is an interesting bird. It's been there a couple of years, but to see one in winter at such a location is quite rare. I noticed it has some kind of band on one leg, not a ring, more like a tag to which a number identifier would be attached. Also, the plumage stage caused some debate when I posted it to a specialist gull group online. I think I worked it out eventually. This individual was probably an injured bird that was taken in by some animal charity, was nursed back to health, and released or escaped. If it was ill then, plumage molt could well have been retarded. The tag on the leg would seem logical, and its easy acceptance of people would explain. Whatever the explanation, it provides a very useful reference for plumage evolution as it matures. I know it's nerdy, but I can't help it. To add further interest, less usual gulls turn up from time to time, and we have witnessed both Little Gull and Iceland Gull over the past couple of years. If it's quietish and the moorhens allow, local lapwings and redshank will use the shallow water on the marshland edge to bathe and preen. Jackdaws, starlings and rooks will do likewise. During winter, the adjoining marshes echo to the trilling of curlew and the whistling of widgeon. Marsh harriers will float over the meadows, flushing the wildfowl and smaller pipits and larks. Sometimes skeins of brent or pink-footed geese will pass overhead, and there is always a chance of a kestrel or sparrowhawk zipping through. Spring brings colour and courtship, nest-building, vocal displays and territorial battles. Summer provides swallows and house martins skimming for a drink and twittering on overhead wires, while families of fluffy ducklings learn the ropes, running the gauntlet of larger birds in their quest for free handouts. Autumn sees things quieten down, while the ducks go through the eclipse, the molt rendering them flightless, and the troop changes its personnel. Winter brings lovely light, diversity, and non-stop action. With so many birds feeding, courting, bathing, preening, skirmishing and squabbling all year round, all close and accessible, it is a truly mesmerising location.
Barry has certainly given us a very detailed description of what goes on throughout the year up at Salthouse, hasn't he? And it sounds as if there is always something going on.